Dear Laura by Elijah Dumba. Chapter 2. That same morning, on Elijah's side, he had just arrived at campus with Festus. He was wearing a grey pair of trousers with a blue shirt and a black basket on top, and Festus was clad in a red and black African outfit.
As a paying customer, exclaimed Festus
as he handed a green note to him, and he laughed at the perceived mockery.
In that moment, he reminisced his mother on stage, modeling for a famous clothing line. It was 6 years before, and 1 year before her death, she had taken her teenage son to her other job, a fashion expo, to see his mother make magic on stage. Whilst backstage, she had told him, "Son, I know that one day you're going to live your dreams, and I want to set an example of what it can be if you pursue your passion as I'm on that stage. So don't you look at your mother up there. I want you to glance at the fact that dreams do come true."
Truth is, she was disillusioned, but couldn't let him notice. She was working more than enough jobs to make ends meet, and he was her hope. She looked at him with a teary shine as he took a seat near her fashion manager. Later that night, she was caught walking as if on the moon. Screams and applause arose from every side of the room. Her son, smiling with innocent bliss, on the brink of bursting ecstatically out of his eyes. He felt mocked, but still believed in his mother's inspiration, even though she died together with her fame. He was ready to make it and revive her name through him. So he took the note from Festus. As he was reading Shakespeare in the library, he took a moment to ask Sandy, the librarian, who was reading Pride and Prejudice, with a steady finger keeping track of what page she was reading. "Do you ever think that I will love as much as I write and read about?" After a long pause, with an almost silent giggle, breathed Sandy, "The answers are in your heart. I heard from somewhere that much as we are blind to the future, our souls can feel what's to come." And right she was. Elijah just couldn't shake the feeling that something was headed for him. That same morning, Laura too arrived at campus in her father's Mercedes-Benz mini limousine. They were both in the back seat, but in two completely different worlds. Joseph was buried deep in a newspaper, and Laura was on her phone, listening to her favorite Waiki Bender track, with her left hand clasped on her cheek. The driver opened the door and she put her phone in her purse, ready to exit the vehicle. "Love you, Daddy," she exclaimed, and her father replied,
"Love you too, darling,"
without feeling the merest necessity of looking at her. Soon, she got tired of waiting for the glance and closed the door. She walked slowly but surely away as the driver shook his head in disbelief of how she seemed rather insignificant to her own father. "She's in too deep," sighed Mr. Alinda as they proceeded with the rest of their journey to Parliament. "I'm sorry, sir, I do not understand," asked the driver.
"Oh no, Frederick, worry not. This is a rather piercing newspaper article.
The speaker is now allegedly an embezzler," replied Mr. Alinda with a benevolent smile.
"One day, chance shall knock at my door, and I will take it.
Of what, you must be wondering? To clean the nation."
"Aye, aye, sir," said the lawyer Frederick. "Frederick's son, me and the president go way back, you know that. I hope I've inspired you enough not to make the mistakes he and I made. The war changed us. One's never the same after that. You take a life too many, even for the rightest of reasons. You were never the same. The people that matter start not to, because you were guilty of a sin that cleanses. And you were certain
You are not the same person their eyes reflect you to be, said Mr. Ralind, for he was certain Laura must have been disappointed.
Frederick, with an emotionally complex smile, sighed.
Roger that, sir.
Mr. Ralinda laughed at him, but deep inside, he felt gratitude for the brief company.
Son, I don't know what I would do without you, he added, reached out, and patted his shoulder.